Hello and welcome to the Andrew Wiggins episode of the Hoop Theory Podcast, aka episode 114, which is in honor of him being the first overall pick in the 14 draft. Recording this one on the afternoon of Wednesday, May 14th in the year of our Lord 2025. My name is Logan Wortman, and unlike usual, I'm actually not joined by my co-host Jacob Roth. He actually doesn't even have a computer right now, I guess, so he hasn't been able to join me for any podcast episodes recently, and I decided, you know, I just got to go ahead and do a solo episode. I'm not fond of doing solo episodes, but, you know, it's been a month now, a day over a month since you've last heard from us, and the playoffs have been going on this entire time. So I just felt like it was a crime for us not to have an episode, you know, get put out at all for this entire playoffs so far. So I just got to do it. So here we go. This will be, you know, a little bit of a, I don't know if I'll do a shorter episode here or if I will just kind of record this section and then continue later on when I have some more time to hit on some more topics and, you know, do a double episode. Who knows? We'll see. You'll probably be able to tell if this episode is like an hour or something like that, then it's probably not just me in this spot, in this location. Well, it will be in this spot, but not at this time, not at this day, probably not on this day. But anyways, before we get into anything, thank you guys for listening. Please be sure to hit us up on Patreon or buy me a coffee if you'd like to support us. That's patreon.com/hooptheory and buymeacoffee.com/hooptheory. All of our links can also be found in the description of both the show and the episode, wherever you're watching or listening to this. We would also greatly appreciate it if you would rate the show, leave a like or a comment. Of course, be sure to subscribe and follow the feed. And lastly, we'd also love it if you sent something into our mailbag for us to read and react to, basketball-related or otherwise. You can send those over to hooptheory.mailbag@gmail.com. I actually need to check the mailbag. I haven't done that in quite a while. That would have been a decent thing to do for a solo episode, but we also have lots of other stuff to hit on. And I honestly don't, I don't have a plan on which what I'm going to hit first, where I'm going to go first with this. So we'll see where this goes, I guess. Last night, the Thunder went up 3-2 in the Denver series. For those who have watched the show before or listened to the show before, you know that I'm a big Nuggets fan, a lifelong Nuggets fan. And I feel not indifferent, but it's not even close to the way I've felt the past couple years watching the Nuggets in the postseason. Like last year, us losing to the Wolves at home in a game 7, you know, losing a 20-point lead at halftime, that really hurt like a lot. You know, I took that pretty hard, that loss. But this season, I don't feel like I'm going to take a loss near as hard just because we're playing with house money. I feel like so far this is just, it's helped Jokic's legacy for the most part. Although he hasn't had his best postseason, he's had borderline his worst in terms of just his numbers and like efficiency and whatnot. But also he's been going up against some pretty insane defensive schemes, defensive teams with the Clippers and then the Thunder back to back, the two best defenses in the world, basically. And the Thunder, best defense of all time this season. Obviously, they don't have the personnel that you would think would be a Jokic stopper one-on-one. But a lot of national people I heard talking about, like, this series was going to be easy for Jokic. And I just never really saw it that way, just because as an entire team, I knew it was going to make life like a nightmare for Jokic in terms of the way he usually likes to wheel and deal to people, to cutters, and also people getting the ball to Jokic in general. And then also the way that the Clippers were able to play just so physically in that series last round, I was like, you know, if that continues into this round, that's going to be ugly as well. And that is exactly what has happened with the Thunder just being able to inhibit Jokic's freedom of movement whenever they really want to, for some odd reason. I'm not sure exactly why they're allowed to do that. There's lots of plays with Alex Caruso or Lugens Dort guarding Jokic where they're just like literally like grabbing him, like bear hugging him from behind, essentially. you know, just things like that. There was that clip last night that went pretty viral of Jokic trying to run past Jalen Williams, Arkansas Jalen Williams, and Jalen Williams, you know, put his arm out and stopped him. And then Jokic stood there to try to show, like, hey, he's literally holding me right now, and tried to run through it. And like, he just stood there for a while, was like, is this really not going to be called? And then decided to show that if he wanted to run the direction he was wanting to run, then he would not be able to. I know, obviously, he could have gotten out of it if he wanted to. I understand that. For all the people that are acting like that was a deserving offensive foul on Jokic, which that's what they gave the play, was an offensive foul somehow. People acting like he was hooking him. Like, he just kept his arms where they were when Jalen Williams armbarred him. People act like also that he jumped into him. The clip that's circulating is, I think, kind of misleading also, the way it starts. It just shows Jokic coming, you know, from off the screen, essentially. Screen as in like the screen of your phone, not a pick. But I don't know why I needed to clarify that. But he's coming, you know, off of the side of the screen, and he does like this swim move. But like, people, it just kind of looks like, if you don't have the context or you didn't watch like the full play, it kind of looks like he's running right into him intentionally. Like, there's not a reason for him to be at that spot on the floor. When you have the camera zoomed out and you see the whole play, it's like he's running to the spot on the floor where he's trying to either set a screen for the guard, or run a dribble handoff, you know, where he usually likes to get the ball on the wing. The Thunder know that that's where he's trying to go. And, just like they have been all series, really, they try to make all of his movements, even when he doesn't have the ball coming up the court, they try to make everything laborsome for Jokic, just make it hard on him, make him have to expend energy for every movement he makes. And so, you know, with that game plan, that's what every team has been doing to Jokic ever since that Lakers game back in February. I want to say the first game they had between the two after the trade deadline. Every team has been doing that, trying to inhibit his freedom of movement. So yeah, that's what they were doing on that play. That's what Jalen Williams is trying to do to him, trying to get in his way. Jokic, anticipating that, is trying to, you can see on the play that he's trying to do like a swim move maneuver, you know, to get past him, which is completely legal. Unless obviously if you throw an elbow or like physically push the, you know, person as you're doing that maneuver, but he doesn't do that. He literally, his arms don't touch him. He tries to go up and over. Jalen Williams puts his arm out and catches him. Like, he literally moves to he meets his body intentionally. I don't understand the people watching that clip saying, like, I understand that it looks weird. I understand that part. But the people who jump as far as to say that Jokic is jumping into Jalen Williams intentionally and flopping and trying to draw this foul. It's like, no, Jokic was trying to play basketball initially. Jalen Williams is doing the thing that he's been doing all series, and Jokic is very frustrated by not getting calls for, literally being pushed when he's just trying to move to a spot, like pushed in the front. I get when you're trying to seal somebody, that's different. You're expected to have some contact there going back and forth. But when you're trying to move frontward, that's in the, at least according to NBA precedent in the past, the way that games have been called, that is a legal, that's something that the offensive player is allowed to do. And if he is inhibited from doing that, that is a foul. So I just don't understand, like, literally by the definition of that, it should be a defensive foul. But yeah, so yeah, then Jokic gets offensive foul for making a scene out of it, I guess. It makes for a pretty funny clip, but yeah, I just wanted to say that for all the comments. I don't know why I get angry at comments, but I just do sometimes on Instagram and stuff, just what people, the disconnect from what people think is going on versus what is actually going on. But anyways, moving on, trying to get back to this game, I guess, or this series. I'm not going to be too upset with either outcome. I picked, for anybody who watched my, you know, playoff prediction video doing my bracket, I picked this series to go six and for the Thunder to win it. which is very possible still. Obviously, I would love for the Nuggets to win the series. This playoffs is getting so weird. If the Thunder lose also, that's going to be just insane. Like, literally the best three teams or the top three, honestly four, if you want to throw the Clippers in there, five, if you want to throw the Lakers in there, for like before the playoffs started, the top five teams that people thought could win the championship, Nuggets were probably sixth, maybe somewhere in there. But anyways, depending on who you ask, obviously. But those five teams are all going to be out, assuming the Celtics lose now that they don't have Jason Tatum, who's suffered a torn Achilles, which I wasn't really planning on getting into right now, but I will at some point at least. But what I'll say for that right now is just prayers up to him, obviously. Very unfortunate. Yeah, so if they lose, they would be out. And then the Thunder, if they were to lose to this Nuggets team, which I just think... it's insane that this is where we're at with the amount of physicality that they've allowed to use on Jokic, the amount of not great Jokic games we've had. Just with all of those things, it's crazy that this is where we're at with the Nuggets. They were leading the series at one point and still are in position. They're still in it. You know, they're giving the Thunder a real series right now. Whether you want to believe that or not, I think everybody agrees with that. I don't know if anybody would disagree. I do see some people calling the Thunder like the most overrated one seed of all time. And it's like literally in the same world as this is the same season the Cavs have the one seed in the East. And you saw what just happened to them. They lost in five games to the Indiana Pacers somehow, which no disrespect to the Pacers. Sorry, I hit my mic there. No disrespect to the Pacers. They have really showed up this postseason, playing way better than I was anticipating. I was not super high on the Pacers coming into this. I felt like I was about as high as consensus, though. I like the Pacers as much as the next guy, I guess, but I was not expecting that. Don't even really fully understand it, how that collapse even really... I mean, obviously they were banged up, but that wasn't the reason. I just... that even without the injuries that were kind of minor... wow. That was a loud groan. I'm sure that got picked up on the mic. My dog just groaning in the background there. Sorry about that. What was I saying? The Cavs, yeah, their collapse is just insane. I don't understand it. Even if they weren't injured, like they had pretty minor injuries. I just don't think that was the reason, obviously, for this type of a collapse. But anyways, yeah, so the people calling the Thunder the most overrated one seed of all time, I just think is ridiculous. To be honest, it's not like they've been playing like their absolute best basketball in this Nuggets series, but I honestly think it's more of a credit to how well the Nuggets have played in this spot. I'm just surprised kind of by, not necessarily surprised. I obviously knew this was in the Nuggets, and I've been in the camp of not necessarily pro that feels a little bit far, but I wasn't really anti. I wasn't outraged by the firing of Michael Malone in terms of the timing of it, you know, as much. Like, I didn't like the fact that it was, you know, it was a disrespectful look and whatnot. I understood all that. But in terms of for this team, what's best for this team this season, I did feel like that was probably the best move for, you know, just timing wise. It really lit a fire under the Nuggets, kind of boosted them, give them a shot in the arm heading into the playoffs. I really do think that was the case. And I thought, honestly, I felt like that was like the most maybe optimistic result, but that was like the thing that I was envisioning, you know, happening. I was hopeful for, I guess I'll say it like that. And that is delivered for the most part, you know. It's just crazy how many minutes everybody's been playing. We're down to playing really six, seven guys. You know, Peyton Watson has played well overall in the postseason in his very limited minutes. We've seen, you know, Julian Strother get into the rotation a tiny bit the past couple games. DeAndre Jordan, you know, in that first half break for Jokic, every few games, you know, in the playoffs so far, he's gotten a look. But yeah, nothing has stuck at all. Peyton Watson is really the only guy other than Russ coming off the bench that has worked. And Michael Porter Jr., just about like every other game, is unplayable. But then every like other or every third game or so, he'll pop off and have a game that, you know, is big. He's a big contributor. So I get why they keep going to him. I get why they keep playing him through this injury, this shoulder injury that he has, which he has so many injuries that we need to go into a deep dive on that sometime also. I don't feel like I've documented that enough here on this podcast. All of his surgeries and then the things that he still currently deals with his drop foot and, you know, all the his ailments, and then how he's still somehow playing through another active injury at the same time with all of those things. It's just crazy how we've gotten here, how he's still playing NBA basketball. But yeah, so other things to jump into. Lakers. I had some thoughts on the Lakers. I actually wrote them on my notepad over here the other day. Not super eloquently, I think, just to make sure I don't forget a little synopsis of my thoughts on them. Yeah, so I wrote down just two little notes. I wrote, didn't think that they'd be better this year, meaning, oh yeah, better from the trade. I was confused by my own note for a second. I'm sorry again. I don't know why. What is with my dog having to just keep groaning in his sleep? I actually think that might have been my other one that time. Actually, no, it was the same one. It was Luka, named after Luka Doncic, who plays for Lakers. So great segue back to what I was originally talking about. The Lakers, after the Luka trade, my initial take on it was that the Lakers will not be better this season. I flipped on that pretty early. Not pretty early. I flipped on that during the regular season. I'll just say it like that. I flipped on that and thought of them as a contender. Entering the postseason, you know, in my playoff bracket, I had them going to a game seven against the Thunder in the Eastern or Western Conference Finals. I had them making it all the way to the third round. And yeah, that was not what happened at all. They lost to Minnesota in five in the first round, got completely dominated by Rudy Gobert in that game five, 27 points, 24 rebounds, I believe, the best game of Rudy Gobert's career, where they just didn't play a single center the entire game. And not even really like Jared Vanderbilt, even like the, you know, their kind of small ball guy. I shouldn't say they didn't play a single center. They did put out Maxi Kleba. They did roll him out, who had not played for the Lakers yet and got, he was in the Luka trade. You know, he's been here for months. He hasn't played, I think, a game since January back in Dallas. So that was pretty crazy that was who he opted to go with. Overall, I've liked JJ as a coach this season. The playoffs were a little suspect. There were some weird things there for sure that confused me, threw me off a little bit. It didn't seem like normal JJ decisions to me. But regardless, the Lakers, though, what I did want to say on them was just that I don't think it should be looked at. Like, it's not as much as of a surprise in hindsight now. I was just very fooled by how good they were able to look in the regular season, even though they had these clear limitations, and I voiced that in my predictions for the playoffs. I was like, I might be very wrong on the Lakers just because they have no depth and no size as well at the big spot. Obviously, they have size everywhere else on their roster, but as far as a center, a big man, a viable big man in the NBA, they didn't really have any. So that's just tough, and I just thought that. Obviously, that could come up to bite them, but the way that they seem to be getting by so easily in the regular season, despite those things, just kind of fooled me a little bit with the way that their defense somehow got better after they traded one of the best defenders in the world and Anthony Davis, just because of the buy-in and I think the scheming of it all, of how to, you know, have a good defense with the personnel that they have. It just, I think it lit a fire under LeBron especially. And also is just a different than convention for NBA teams, you know, having to navigate a defense in a regular season matchup. You know, it's just kind of like you're not your ordinary defense that you see night to night. So that can throw some teams off when you're seeing them in a one game, you know, head to head setting. But in a playoff series, this is something a point that I did not think about heading into the playoffs, but makes sense in hindsight, is in a playoff series, something like that is a lot less of an advantage, you know, the element of surprise, because you're playing the same team over and over again. They have like a week to, because this was not a play-in series, it was a 3-6, so they both had a week to game plan for each other. Minnesota was very prepared for combating their very limited defense personnel-wise. So that just makes sense. I don't know why I didn't put very much thought, I feel like, into my prediction for that series. I don't know if I would have made a different decision if I would have thought more about it. I just kind of wish that I saw those signs that were there to see. But I guess I hate to blame consensus, but that I don't know if I heard a single person picking the Wolves other than Wolves fans, to be quite honest, which I heard some people making that point that they're surprised that nobody, like there's just nobody who has picked the Wolves. That surprised me as well. But yeah, we all just felt good about the Lakers. I didn't even bring up one of my main points of why I thought the Lakers would beat the Wolves was like, just Luka versus Gobert. And in my head is like, Luka's going to feast. That's one of his favorite matchups. Luka's just kind of a step slow, it seems like, obviously coming back from injury this season, being out for, you know, a good chunk there, not, you know, being in his best conditioning. Just makes sense that he doesn't have as much of an advantage there, one-on-one. And then also Gobert played a great series on top of that. And the also, this is not the, you know, Rudy Gobert of in the past where he doesn't have any defense around him, any perimeter defenders around him to, you know, fill up the gaps. This Timberwolves team definitely has that in spades. And Julius Randle, especially jumping, like stepping up and being that this series was a huge factor that I had no idea was coming. Julius Randle stepping up in the postseason for the first time in his career was not on my radar really, but that ended up happening. So he made me eat my words, you know, for sure about how much I did not like that trade for them in the offseason, heading into the season with New York, that cat trade. I think it has worked out mostly for both teams, to be quite honest. I mean, it's stylistically still not the best fit with Randall's floor spacing versus Cat's, obviously, but I think Randall has found in what ways he can maximize what advantages this fit does provide, if that makes sense. And I think that he's done a great job of doing that. And yeah, so this Lakers thing, the Luka deal, obviously not a mistake. I don't know if I've made it sound like I think that at all. I don't think I have. But just to be clear on that, obviously still do that move 10 times out of 10, 100 times out of 100. It obviously, it was just a move for not this year. And I said that back when the deal happened. I guess we all just got caught up in how good it looked this season that we raised our expectations. But I had no expectations for them this season after they made that deal. I was like, this year's basically a throwaway. They don't have a real team right now. They just have Luka and LeBron and, you know, some good perimeter players, but they don't have an actual depth chart. They don't have big men to pair with those guys. They need to acquire that. And they did not acquire a playoff rotation level guy to do that. Although, if I was there coaching in Los Angeles in place of JJ Redick, not saying, obviously, JJ Redick, better guy for the job, not throwing my hat into the ring, but I would have played Jackson Hayes, like, at least a little bit when, I guess, it's a hard situation. He probably doesn't want to throw him in there when he tells him, you know, pregame that he probably won't play him, but you just got to be able to make adjustments like that when you're being eaten alive inside by Rudy Gobert, who one of his biggest weaknesses or one of his biggest drawbacks as a star in this league, I'll say, has been that on the offensive end, he hasn't been able to punish teams in the past for going small against them. This time he did. He absolutely did just that. So there we go with that. I'll touch on the lottery quick, I guess. I probably will talk about it more in depth again. But since we're talking about the Lakers, the NBA draft lottery that happened the other night, just insane work by the league. It makes me, going back to another one of my initial takes after the Luka trade, was that I thought, like, what made the most sense to me at the time, I kind of didn't really revisit this take that much, but this is all I could think about back when it happened, was that the league manufactured this move. After all the stuff from Nico Harrison and stuff, I think I started to believe, like, no, that guy just actually believes that and made that move. Both things might be true, to be honest. He was willing to be the fall guy, the league stepping in and ensuring the owner, you know, that would be okay if Nico Harrison made this move, because obviously it helps everybody in the league out, because everybody makes more money with having the Lakers be the insano brand that they are, optimizing a perfect star, up-and-coming star like Luka in a bigger market, the biggest market there is, optimizing his brand, both brands. And then, yeah, the league just, you know, cutting a deal with Dallas saying, hey, we'll compensate you. We'll give you some money to basically make up for what losing Luka will do, you know, to your tax book or to your checkbook or whatever. Not thinking of phrases right now the best, but they, you know, cut a deal doing that, basically saying like, we'll pay you off for everybody to make more money with Luka in LA. And then also part of this deal, we'll give you some favorable, you know, luck in the lottery. I think that they probably should have pulled like a Incredibles thing. If anybody gets that reference, I just thought of it now. But, you know, at the end of the Incredibles, the first one, the first movie where, Dash, the son of the family, the oldest son, because Jack is also a male, I believe. Anyways, so Dash, his thing the whole movie is that he wants to be a track runner. Like, he wants to compete in sprints and in track, obviously, because his superpower is being super fast. But they don't want to be too obvious because they don't want to be, you know, give away that they're superhumans, that they're superheroes. And so they have Dash agree to, if he's going to compete in track, he just can't get first. He has to always get second at best. So I feel like the league should have pulled a Dash here. Can't remember their last name off the top of my head. That would be better if I could. Bob is the dad's name, is Mr. Incredible's first name. Bob something. Can't remember it off the top of my head. But if I, yeah, anyways, Dash, they could have pulled one of those moves. This is really terrible. They could have pulled one of those moves and gotten, you know, the second pick in the draft for the Mavericks, let's say, or maybe the third pick, you know, because they have the 11th best odds. Like, any of those outcomes is a pretty good deal. Obviously, it doesn't make up for losing Luka. Still, this probably doesn't. Cooper Flagg, I don't think, is going to be Luka necessarily. He could. But I doubt that. I feel like he's going to be maybe a rung below that class of player is where I think his more realistic ceiling is. But still, though, it's just too obvious if that is the case. I mean, that's the other thing is it's so obvious that it's like, did this happen? Did they actually rig this? Because how dumb would they have to be to actually do that? How it's so obvious. But then at the same time, they can be like, what? It's the lottery. It's, you know, we don't choose it. We don't rig it. And so it's, I don't know. It's so, it's like, I'm going back and forth as in like a mind game psychologically, how would they make this decision? But it's just, it's confusing. It's confusing to me. It feels rigged. It feels like this is not real. And there's a lot of people have thought the draft lottery has been rigged for years. It might be, honestly, it really might be. Also, but the thing is, they would have had to rig, or maybe not. I'd have to look into this a little bit. But them and the Hawks, I want to say, maybe it was somebody else. Maybe the Bulls. Yeah, I think the Mavs and the Bulls had, because they were tied in lottery odds for, you know, the record. And they had to flip a coin on the draft order, on the, not draft order, but the lottery odds order. So according to that coin toss, Dallas ended up 11th. And then in the lottery, ended up with the number one pick, which was like a 1 or 2% chance, I think. It's just crazy. That's just crazy to me. But it makes sense. It makes sense that the league would do that in order to benefit, you know, everybody involved in terms of like financially, other than Luka, I guess, because he loses out on so much money because of the, you know, bird rights, which is crazy. But anyways, that'll have to do it for this section. I don't know if this is the full episode or not. I doubt it. It's only been, you know, 30 minutes. But maybe. I mean, that works for a little mini episode. Who knows? Again, I still don't know. I'm ending it now, and I still don't know if this is the full episode or not. But so I guess I'll just do the outro, though, basically. So stay happy, stay healthy, and I'll talk to you guys next time.